This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger. Good morning and good morning, world, as we get together for our weekly visit here on the Saturday morning show. And that weather forecast doesn't sound very good because we don't have a forecast for snow in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is where WGN West is located. I think today, we hit 90 earlier this week, and I think today we're going to be in the upper 80s. So no snow in the forecast, though. But delighted to have you with us here on the Saturday morning show as we talk dairy with John Onken, publisher of the Agri-Dairy Business Letter in Madison, Wisconsin. He'll be on with us a little bit later. And Max will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. Because, as I mentioned, Tuesday was a day of frustration for me because doctors say, no, you can't fly just yet. So I was parked in Arizona and unable to get to Washington, D.C. for the 45th National Agriculture Day. And I think all but 2 years of that 45, I've been there to be a part of the program, and so I'm a little bit frustrated that I couldn't get there this year. But we'll be there next year. And as we look at the market this week that just ended, we start the week with Facebook crashing Wall Street. We end the week with the trade war crashing Wall Street. Not a good day in the marketplace, but markets always, well, in my memory, come back sooner or later. So we'll be watching that market, and we'll also be reminding you that next week is a four-day trading week. And normally, the last Friday of March is the day of some very important reports from the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington. We get the quarterly grain stocks report. We get the quarterly pig crop report, and we get the planting intentions report for the 2018 crop year. That's always the last Friday of March, but it won't be this year because Good Friday. And that means government offices are closed. There'll be no releases from USDA, and of course, markets will be closed. So all of that information will be coming out on Thursday. And we get the grain stocks report, planting intentions report on Thursday morning. And Thursday afternoon, we'll get the pig crop report. So those are very important pieces of information that we'll be getting, but not on Friday. So make a note, it'll be out on Thursday. Markets will be closed on Friday. Well, thank you for joining us here on this Saturday morning, and we'll check in with Max Armstrong when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. It's 14 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, and now we're going to head to WGN Radio East, where we find Max Armstrong, who was able to get to National Agriculture Day and participate last Tuesday. Good morning, Max.
Well, good morning and happy National Agriculture Week, Orion. It's not quite over, but will be soon. And we enjoyed immensely being in Washington this week as a part of the National Agriculture Day observance on Tuesday. In fact, we were at the American Farm Bureau headquarters for breakfast. Later on in the morning, we were at the U.S. Department of Agriculture for an address by the Vice President of the United States as he proclaimed National Ag Day. And then just after the noon hour, it was my privilege to moderate a presentation with the Secretary of Agriculture. Sonny Perdue came over to address, and then I moderated a panel on sustainability in agriculture. But early in the day, I talked with the president of the American Farm Bureau, Georgia Farmer Zippy Duvall, about the significance of Agriculture Day and Agriculture Week.
Well, I think it's important for our country and the people in Washington and around our country to recognize the greatest industry in our world and especially our country. You know, our country was started around agriculture. It still evolves around agriculture. We're the main driver of the economies in most of our country, especially outside the urban areas. And it's just important to recognize the men and women and this industry.
We're right here around lawmakers and regulators. That's an important audience for agriculture, isn't it?
It is, because in this day and time, a lot of lawmakers and a lot of regulators are out of touch with what we do on the farms today. So when our farmers come to town and be able to relay their stories to them on how those regulations or laws are affecting them, it's powerful.
As we take a look at the farm bill that we hope to have written this year, we understand that there's a little bit of a hang-up at the moment. A markup had been planned for this week, and apparently it isn't going to happen. How worrisome should that be to agriculture? It's still early in the year, isn't it?
Well, I think worrisome as far as the timeline, we should worry about that, and we were hoping we were going to be in markup. Unfortunately, Mr. Peterson and Mr. Conaway's trying to get their minds together and smooth the road out so we can move forward. You know, my hopes are still that we're going to get this done before the end of September, and because our farmers need it. We're in a very bad economy, and there's no other time that we need a really good, strong farm bill than now. So I'm hoping they'll focus on that rather than the issues.
If we wait till later in the year, could those midterm elections possibly slow down the process a bit?
When they come back off of Easter break, if they're not hitting the ground hard, then we're gonna run into some risk that the elections will affect it a little bit later on. But they need to hit the ground running when they come back from Easter break. And if it doesn't happen then, the chances of getting it done before the election is going to be difficult.
That's Zippy Duvall, Georgia farmer who is president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, the largest farm group in the country. And also on the program, fellow Georgian, Sonny Perdue, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. As I guided some questions to him, yeah, he acknowledged that trade is a big deal for farmers right now, an important subject.
A lot of anxiety across the country over our trade policies from an agricultural perspective. The good news is that we're such a bountiful producer, we can produce more than we can consume here. And what do with that? We export that. In fact, agriculture enjoys a surplus in a trade deficit. Our president is very, very focused on trade deficits, and I like to remind him on a continual basis that agriculture enjoys a trade surplus vis-a-vis all the other nations of the world, and we try to keep that in front of him as reducing the overall trade deficit. We were in the Oval Office the other day, and I was coming off that tough bronchitis, that nasty bug that many people have had, and I was prone to kind of coughing fits. And we were talking about another topic there, and the president got off back onto NAFTA and his negotiating skills, and he truly believes that he have to withdraw from an agreement in order to get the best deal. And I didn't mean to, but I just started in one of my coughing fits. And he looked at me and said, "Sonny, are you okay?" And I'd recovered by that time. I said, "Yes, Mr. President, I just get choked up every time you start talking about withdrawing from NAFTA." So I think he got the message again. But nonetheless, I do hope and I pray that the steel and aluminum tariffs can be used for the good of consummating a renewed NAFTA deal that's good for American producers, good for the American economy in many ways. Many of these things, frankly, have to do with other industries and other sectors of the economy besides agriculture, such as autos and auto parts, and we know that. But I think, again, there's some fine-tuning that we could enjoy from agricultural perspective, particularly vis-a-vis Canada and its limitations over dairy, poultry, eggs there. And we believe that their consumers in Canada could enjoy a great benefit enjoying our dairy products and the prices thereof, eggs and poultry as well, while they are not included in the current NAFTA agreement. So the president's very serious about that. I think Ambassador Lighthizer, last time I spoke to him, it was last week, I think, felt more optimistic maybe that we could get a deal done, and the maneuvering regarding steel and aluminum and those exemptions may be a leverage point that could help that NAFTA negotiations move along as well. But trade is at the tip of everybody's mind, not only the current steel and aluminum, but all the conversation and all the things they read about with China. We're well aware of what percentage of soybean that China takes from our farmers, as well as other crops. And we are anxious that agriculture may be the tip of the retaliatory spear again, as it has been in the past. That's not paranoia necessarily. We see what's happened all the way back, even prior to the wheat embargo from President Carter, over how agriculture has been used. I think we saw it with the tire situation as well, and how it's kind of the whipping post for trade disruptions between countries, and we hope that it won't come to that. I think the president is doing his best on aluminum and steel to mollify, mitigate any of those things as well by inviting countries to come, and I understand there are already some exemptions in place, and we hope that we'll be able to talk about more as well. But naturally, farmers, when you have 20 cents out of every dollar that you make depends on export, you have a right to be anxious about that, and we understand that, and we continue to advocate at the White House for those.
Sonny Perdue, the Secretary of Agriculture and the Trump administration, acknowledging how nervous farmers are about the trade situation right now, and especially given the fact that China is a huge customer of the United States soybean farmer. But some people are hastening to point out that big hog herd, the biggest hog-producing nation of the world, China, has to be fed. And yes, they can get some of those beans from South America, but they'll have to continue to buy from the United States. Well, have a great weekend, Orion. And again, happy National Agriculture Week.
Well, thank you very much, Max, for that complete report on activities on Tuesday, Washington, D.C., for National Agriculture Day. Enjoyed that report because I couldn't be there to participate, but you filled me in on it. You know, talking about the trade situation with the steel aluminum tariffs now in place, there's no question that farmers were really upset because many farmers voted for Donald Trump for president. And from hog producers in Iowa to apple growers in Washington State and winemakers in California, farmers expressed deep disappointment yesterday over being put in the middle of a potential trade war with China. After President Trump announced plans to impose tariffs on products including Chinese steel, Beijing responded yesterday with a threat to slap an equal 25% charge on U.S. products such as pork and a 15% tariff on such things as wine, apples, ethanol, and stainless steel pipe. American farmers should be not necessarily infuriated, but close to it. That was the statement from Wayne Humphrey, who farms corn and soybeans and raises hogs and cattle near Columbus Junction, Iowa. He said, "We've invested a lot of time, talent, and treasure in developing markets around the world, and with a stroke of a pen, that investment has been jeopardized. Overall, U.S. farmers shipped nearly $20 billion of goods to China in 2017, and the American pork industry spent sent $1.1 billion in products, and that makes China the number three market for U.S. pork." And the president of the National Pork Producers Council, Jim Heimerl, a pig farmer from Johnstown, Ohio, said, "No one wins in these tit-for-tat trade disputes, least of all the farmers and the consumers." And the U.S. has complained for years about China's sharp-elbowed trading practices, accusing it of pirating trade secrets, manipulating its currency, forcing foreign companies to hand over technology, and flooding world markets with cheap steel and aluminum that drive down prices and put U.S. manufacturers out of business. And so on Thursday, the Trump administration declared the talk approach a failure, noting the U.S. trade deficit in goods with China last year hit a record $375 billion. And the president said, "We're doing something that will be the start of making trade with China more fair. Our past presidents should never have allowed this to happen." But as we're saying, the stakes are high. China is America's largest trading partner. Last year, the two countries exchanged $636 billion worth of goods, and American companies such as Boeing and Caterpillar depend heavily on the Chinese market. But then you look at the agricultural side of it, and indeed it could be a problem, because the trade wars always lead to retaliation, and they're in China picking, apples. Jim Baer, CEO of the U.S. Apple Association, he warned that U.S. apple growers are going to get hurt in a fight we didn't start and in which we have no interest. And at a time when U.S. wine exports have been slipping overall, there's been growth in exports to China, where a rapidly growing middle class is adopting many tastes that are truly Western. So this is one that we're going to have to watch very carefully, and let's hope it's not the kind of trouble that some people are talking would be possible. Well, we're going to take a break for news, and then we'll come back, and we'll share with you on Samuelson Says something I have before, but as we approach graduation time from high schools, I think this is good to hear it again. A speech that Bill Gates made to a graduating class of high school seniors a year or two ago. I've quoted it before, and I'll be sharing it with you after the 5:30 news, and then we'll talk dairy with John Onken, all coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show. And we're here with the second half of the Saturday Morning Show coming up. We'll talk dairy and the challenge facing dairy farmers in the marketplace currently with John Onken, who is the publisher of the Agri-Dairy Business Letter based in Madison, Wisconsin. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson. This week, sharing something we've shared before, advice for graduating high school seniors from Bill Gates. I know you love your glass ceramic cooktop, except when it's time to clean it. So let me tell you about one product that will leave your cooktop sparkling clean. It's Wink Glass Ceramic Cooktop Cleaner, strong enough to remove those greasy, grungy spots and yet gentle enough for smooth top ranges. It cleans, polishes, and conditions smooth top ranges. And special conditioners leave a protective coating which helps prevent scratches. That's Wink Cooktop Cleaner. Learn more at WHINK.com. This week on Samuelson Says, as many of you are approaching graduation time for your high school students, is something you have probably seen because it's been on the internet for a while, but I sent a copy of this to my two grandchildren when they were graduating. It's advice from Bill Gates, who gave a speech at a high school about 11 things they did not and will not ever learn in school. And I'd like to quote some of them from the Bill Gates address. Rule number one, life is not fair. Get used to it. Rule number two, the world doesn't care about your self-esteem. The world will expect you to accomplish something before you feel good about yourself. Rule number three, you will not make $60,000 a year right out of high school. You won't be a vice president with a car phone until you earn both. Number four, if you think your teacher is tough, wait till you get a boss. Number five, flipping burgers, not beneath your dignity. Your grandparents had a different word for burger flipping. They called it opportunity. Rule number six, if you mess up, it's not your parents' fault, so don't whine about your mistakes. Learn from them. Number seven, before you were born, your parents weren't as boring as they are now. They got that way from paying your bills, cleaning your clothes, and listening to you talk about how cool you think you are. Rule number eight. Your school may have done away with winners and losers, but life has not. In some schools, they have abolished failing grades, and they'll give you as many times as you want to get the right answer. This doesn't bear the slightest resemblance to anything in real life. Rule nine, life is not divided into semesters. Rule number 10, television is not real life. People actually have to leave their iPhones and go to jobs. And rule number 11, be nice to nerds. Chances are you'll end up working for one. The advice Bill Gates delivered to a high school graduating class a couple of years ago. I share these thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks brings us up to 20 minutes before 6 o'clock. And standing by is John Onken. And we'll talk dairy with John Onken when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It has been a while since we've chatted with John Onken, Madison, Wisconsin. He is the editor of the AgriDairy Business Letter, which I read faithfully every issue. And I'm going to talk about a couple of things he wrote about in his latest issue. John, good morning, and I'm glad you're still covering the dairy industry.
Well, the dairy industry is hurting, but people are still going to meetings. We found out last week at the BDPW meeting.
Well, let's talk about that meeting, because I've attended it at times over the years. I know you cover it. It's the Professional Dairy Producers of Wisconsin. What were they talking about this year?
Well, the program itself was loaded with, I think, about 50 different seminars and subject matter sessions. Some of them were what you'd call motivational, and they need that in the dairy industry. There were, they said, 1,350 people there, which is down from 1,700 a year ago. I'm not sure why that is. Maybe it's the climate in the dairy industry. But farmers, I think, like these kind of meetings. In the first place, they're good farmers that come to hear these meetings. I always remember as a county agent, you'd have educational meetings, and the people who needed to be educated never came. But the good managers did. Same thing for the PDPW meeting. But it was a lot of talking among farmers and a lot of wondering what the future holds.
And right now it's not looking that bright for a lot of dairy farmers, especially if they have debt loans. How active are the bankers in determining who will milk cows and who won't?
Well, if you have if you owe a lot of money, you're probably in deep trouble because you borrow from the bank on the equity that you own in the farm. And there's rumors that there are several large dairies, mega dairies, so to speak, that are in financial trouble. I don't know that for sure, but bankers said big or small, when your equity gets low, you're in deep trouble, and that's happening. But many of the dairy farms at this program, I think, were the people who had saved some money and people who didn't borrow as much as some had to. It's tough for a beginning farmer these days. I don't know what the future brings. The milk prices are sort of in the dump, so to speak, in many farmers' opinions. But at the same time, Ori and I ran into two different couples, young couples, who are going to start dairying in the next month or two. It's hard to figure that out. They're very confident they're going to be successful, while other ones are... I think most farmers will probably add a few more cows, because if you make a little bit on every cow, you add more cows. And it's kind of strange to find too much milk, but yet many farmers will be adding a few more cows.
Well, I see here you said in your newsletter, everyone admits overproduction is the big challenge, but yet many farmers talked of adding a few more cows. And I keep hearing from consumers in the city who don't really understand farming firsthand, but they keep asking me, why do dairy farmers milk more cows when we're not consuming what they're producing now?
Well, I think there's two different situations. There's the larger situation of overproduction, but if you're a dairy farmer and you can get a little more income by adding a few more cows, you do it. And there are a lot of cows for sale, and the price is good now because we keep losing the small farms. Last year there were 500 less dairy farms in the state, licensed dairy farms. But the cows are never out of the business. They've just moved to another dairy. And these larger dairies can handle a few more and get a little more income. They do it.
And then in your report, you said labor is another hot subject, with both a shortage of available help and fears that Hispanic employees would be forced to leave. Again, it's a matter of not knowing anything about the short and long-term future of the immigrant labor farms.
Well,
there are a lot of immigrant cow milkers in Wisconsin, aren't there?
Well, we've had immigrants, particularly from Mexico, for many years. And back 10 years ago, they used to come over, and then they'd go back a month a year, but they'd always replace themselves with an uncle or a cousin or somebody. They could go back and forth over the border. And now, in recent years, they can't do that. And they're very afraid. There have been instances of a couple of Hispanics picked up by the authorities in one way or another. And the farmer's problem is that in every farm over 100 cows, you have immigrant labor, Hispanics mainly. And farmers don't have a clue who's going to milk the cows if the Hispanics aren't here. So they're worried about the what the president's going to do about the illegals, if they're illegal. They all have papers, but they may not be legal. They may be copies of other people's social security number, and it's a problem to get labor. They're very afraid to move. They want to keep their job, and what that is going to be is up to the federal government, with the president and Congress, what they're going to do about this Hispanic employees we've had for many, many years now.
And you said that farmers who have Hispanic employees don't have any plan for what happens if they leave.
No. What are you going to do milking 1,000 cows or 2,000 or 5,000 or even 7,000 cows if you have 20 or 30 Hispanics and they, for one reason or another, leave? Who's going to milk the cows?
Right, yeah.
That's a open question that no one has an answer for.
On the equipment side, are we putting in more robotic milkers?
Well, that's one of the things that's happening. The robots are going into dairy farms. I recently wrote about a farm up in northern Wisconsin that lost part of their barn through a fire. And they made the move. They're rebuilding now. And I think they're going to put in robotic milking, I think 16 robots, which would be the biggest in the state. And it won't cut all of the help, but it'll cut some of the labor costs down. And robots are not cheap.
It's a big financial investment, isn't it?
Yes, they were running about a $250,000 a robot, but the farmers look at it as a long-term investment. If you had employees, you'd have to pay them and take care of housing and insurance and what have you. So they're looking at a long-term investment in robots. And I think they're going in about as fast as the companies can build them.
And the robots will always be there. They won't be late for milking time.
No, and they call you if anything's wrong. That's interesting. The robot, if it's not going on to the cow right or something's wrong, somebody gets a cell phone call, and they go out and fix it in the
amazing.
Middle of the night or the middle of the day.
Amazing technology. Speaking of technology, you gave a word of encouragement to people to attend the show at Oshkosh. Now, it happens next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And what is it? Why is it such a good show?
Well, this goes way back 50-some years ago. The electrical companies in Madison, Power and Light, Wisconsin Power and Light, started a farm show. The next year, one started at Green Bay in the parking lot of Lambeau Field. It was basically tents. Then 10 or 11 years ago, the Packers were building all the time, and the parking lot became more crowded. So they moved this show down to Oshkosh. The Experimental Aircraft Association has four beautiful hangars, a couple hundred yards apart, on concrete. And the show has been run on that ground ever since. It's nice because if it rains or snow, as it has sometimes, you have concrete and you have indoor facilities. The exhibitors love it. It's drawing about 20,000 people a year. And I think many of them look at it as the selling farm show held annually in the state. And it's still conducted by the electrical company. And it's a great show. People will come, and they have great food, all local food, the baked potatoes and the beef sandwiches and pork sandwiches and what have you. Great
so
show.
It starts Tuesday, the 27th, and it's a three-day show, 27th, 28th, and 29th of...
And there's a $3 car admission, no general admission, but $3 per car.
Okay. Final question, John. How can people get your AgriDairy business letter? Where can they reach you?
Well, I have an email. That's probably the best way. I don't know if anybody would record it, but it's jfodairy2@gmail.com. JFODairy and the number 2@gmail.com.
All right. Thank you again for your time, and we'll keep in touch with you as we watch this fascinating dairy industry. John Onken, AgriDairy Business Newsletter, here on the Saturday Morning Show. The Cattle on Feed report for February came out yesterday, and not good news for the beef industry. Larger cattle numbers, meaning more beef tonnage around the late summer and early fall period. Rich Nelson of Allendale, the chief strategist there, said this is a dry weather story and not great news for the trade, because the numbers up 9%. The number of cattle on feed, March 1st. The number of cattle placed on feed in February up 7%. And the number marketed in February only up 2%. And that means, really, if the processors and the retailers decide to take advantage of this report, and it would mean a lot more beef at the beef counter. And if that price doesn't come down, ring the bell at the meat counter and ask why. But they're calling live cattle down at least $2 Monday in the front months, and they're calling the October into 2019 down $1.50, and they're calling feeder cattle down $2.50 to $3 when we hit the Monday trade. Well, that's our time. Again, a reminder, coming up to a four-day trading week, and those important reports on the last Friday of March, quarterly grain stocks, quarterly pig crop, and planting intentions will be issued on Thursday this coming week because government offices will be closed and markets will be closed. So keep that in mind as you make your trading plans for this week. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for engineering our broadcast this morning, and thanks to you for listening here on WGN Radio Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.